Hello, welcome to another episode of Oklahoma Cannabis, Alex and Aaron. I am here with Aaron.
What's up, everybody?
And we have a special guest.
Oh my gosh, we have a super, super.
So fun.
Super special.
Why don't you introduce Aaron, because you know
the credentials you can get. Hi, everybody. I'm here. We all know me. Mm-hmm. But our super special guest is...
Drum roll, please.
Okay. Ward 8, Norman City Council member, Alex Scott is in the house. Woo!
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yes.
So excited that you're here. You just rushed right from City Hall here. Is that correct?
I did. Yes. Mm. 2-hour finance committee meeting that I chaired. My first committee meeting to chair. I was very excited about it.
Yeah. So a pretty exciting day all around.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
all around.
I never know what my day is going to look like sometimes. Other than, you know, I do work from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. and then I have a schedule. But what happens in between is always a mystery.
Isn't everybody's a mystery?
Life is a mystery.
Yes, it is. So, in saying that, what was it, you know, how'd you get to where you are now? You're the youngest, correct, in your district or the ward, right?
In the city of Norman. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Ever, folks.
Yeah, and that's a very big accomplishment. So, how did you get there? I mean, how did they even...
Where'd you start? A lot of hard work and a lot of people who volunteered and believe in me. And, you know, I don't know if now is the best time to say that I'm running for State Senate District 15 and it's going to be a lot of hard work. But we're going to do it. It's another thing that I'm running for. But I was elected on the Norman City Council. And that part of the reason I'm running for State Senate now is because of my time on council. However, so I was elected on my birthday in 2018.
That's fantastic.
Wow, that's
24th
amazing.
Birthday.
That's so amazing.
I was so stoked. It was a great day.
That's even better than turning 21.
It was better.
Isn't it?
That's better.
Yes.
Man, that's exciting.
But so I got started. I became involved in politics. The long story is I went vegetarian when I was 15 in a really small town and nobody understood it. I, you know, started with animal stuff.
Beef.
I started getting really interested in health and nutrition and things like that and, you know, what's going in my body. So I quit eating fast food and all of these things. And so
it's important.
To be aware of the environment and what's going on.
Sugar is the worst. And how come there's no, you know, measurement for how much sugar, really?
Right.
Like, what's what's a good daily percentage? You know, there's no daily percentage for sugar.
There's a documentary, actually, I think.
Netflix.
Amazon Prime. Uh-huh. There's this really great, it has everything to do with sugar. And Michelle Obama's campaign for, you know, healthy foods and stuff like that. So what I saw when I was 15, actually, when I went vegetarian, was like the mass production and exploitation of animals for our way of life is
right.
the, like, metaphor, you know, for right. how elites, I believe, exploit our labor as working class people to sustain their own lifestyle. And so I became
very aware
very quickly. And then I started protesting outside of cosmetic companies that performed animal testing when I was writing in high school. Any of my papers were pertaining to moving away from that. All of the makeup I use is cruelty free. Highly recommend any kind of skincare.
That's awesome.
So you were basically primed for politics.
It sounds like you were primed from the beginning. Yeah.
Truly. Yeah. Okay. And so, but that's the long part of it. And then when I was in high school, I took AP Environmental Science and my teacher told me then, she said, you should either become an environmental lawyer because you care so much about this stuff. So animals and environmentalism is really where I got my start, where my interest became, well, not my start, but my interest.
Right.
And so she told me you should either be an environmental lawyer or you should get into politics and, you know, run for office and on an environmental platform. And at the time I was like, that's whack. I was 18. There was no way, you know, I could ever do anything like that. But she honestly planted a seed. And now that seed is, you know.
Well, growing. We love to plant seeds.
I'm so great. Yeah.
We love to plant seeds. Yeah. Just to let you know.
Where's the sound effect for that?
Yeah, that's a good sound effect.
Come on, Alex.
That's a good one.
Anyway, so I came to college and got my degree in classical studies, which is basically like Latin education.
Uh-huh.
So when I graduated college, I wanted to become a Latin teacher. At the time, there weren't any positions available because I graduated from my bachelor's in December of 2015. And so I would have to wait till the cycle, you know, basically the new year. So I went to work at Dell as tech support. But that wasn't my passion. But I got into the tech industry because when I was in undergrad, I did code. I did extensive programming language.
So yeah, women in tech is good. Yeah. So that was a good avenue to go down to.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
I definitely have the tech background. I straight up have a public service background. I still provide client services at Dell. Like it's still customer service. Like that's my mentality.
We talk about customer service all the time on this show. Literally all the time. Because that is literally what life is everywhere. Yeah. It really is.
It's relationships and how you treat people.
All the time.
All the time.
That's all it is. We talk about customer service all the time on here.
Yes. And so, and that's what I did. And then I became a teacher. And what happened was when I first signed on to become a teacher in the 2016 school year, I became a Latin teacher at an actual local high school here. And I became involved with the Oklahoma Education Association. I just signed up. One day I went to this thing because I actually didn't have any teaching experience. I didn't have classroom management experience at all because I went the subject, like the specification route. Yeah. I knew my subject and I look really young. And so the first 2 weeks was it was a challenge getting over that.
Absolutely.
Getting over that hurdle with those kids, man. It was really great though. Yeah. I wouldn't trade it for anything. They were amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Because I would assume it helped you grow and mature, you know.
My own personality. Yeah. Like check myself, you know, how am I? Because I don't have that relationship or I didn't have that training, you know. And so having to adjust my personality, which is sometimes a little detached, and trying to say, well, why would they be acting this way? So I had, you know, the customer service background and I dealt with angry customers all the time. You know, I was like, or that prepared me to go into teaching and deal with pre-adolescence.
Right.
With all of this stuff going on. And I'm not that old. So I knew, because when I started teaching, I was 22. And I remember what it was like in high school. I remember that stress and all of what they're going through. And so I was like, I'm going to be patient and they'll be patient with me. And they were. And I was so grateful. That's
fantastic.
Yeah. But yeah, so I was involved with the Education Association of Moore, actually.
The OEA.
The OEA. And so the first time I knocked doors, so while I was out picketing, you know, in my teens, when I actually first started knocking doors was for State Question 779. If you will recall, was the penny sales tax that would have given teachers, public school teachers, a raise. And it also would have... given some money to higher ed and pre-K and all of that stuff.
Correct.
So I was, you know, working a part-time job on top of teaching because I took a pay cut, about $10,000 to go from the tech industry to go teach. So that was really challenging. And then I was spending my additional time asking for money out of my neighbor's pocket because the state legislature hadn't raised the GPT. They hadn't come up with some sort of alternate funding mechanism or additional funding mechanism. Or revenue structure to actually do what we needed, which was fund public education in Oklahoma. So I was going out and asking my neighbors. Ultimately, it failed, as we know. And so I became very angry and
fired up.
As you should, though, because it's so unfortunate teachers don't get paid what they deserve. And that you'd have to even go out there and do that.
That's what I'm saying.
And I think it's crazy to be like one of the only states where teachers have to go out and beg and ask GoFundMes and stuff. And I'm like, totally. That shouldn't be going on.
They shouldn't have to do that. Yeah.
So it's crazy to think that you had to actually go out there and do that. And then that can play into the politics because from a person that's not involved, I'm just watching. I don't really know what's really, really going on. I just see a lot of teachers angry as they should be protesting.
Yes. But I was there too.
Yeah exactly. So it's like, I don't know what's going on behind.
That's
behind
right. I did see you there.
Yeah. So you were at that march that what was that?
I actually like 2 years ago, roughly? That was 2017. No, that was 2018. That was last year.
I couldn't remember. Okay,
that was 2018 session. And I wasn't teaching at the time. I only taught for a year and I said, this isn't sustainable. I'm going back to get my master's. I can't work two jobs and do one in this political climate.
Yeah.
Something's got to give. Something's got to change. Really what happened was, you know, I was involved with the OEA, did that, I told a legislator in January of 2017, he told me that I shouldn't be criticizing my legislators, that I should be thanking them and working with them. And I said, thank you for what? I'm not criticizing you. I'm asking you to do your job. Why am I out here doing it? Why am I asking my neighbors for a raise? People don't trust y'all to do what you're supposed to do with the money, which is why they voted against it. And as a master's of public administration, I've studied extensively taxation, primarily like budgets and taxes in Oklahoma, tax equity and what that looks like.
Wow.
And so knowing that, what I know now about taxes and specifically sales tax is the most regressive form of taxation. And Oklahoma is the ninth most regressive state in the nation for taxation. So that means that our disadvantaged, our low income population is paying disproportionately more out of their pockets than those who can actually afford it. What's really messed up is that they are the ones who rely most on the public services that our legislators are not prioritizing. And that is why I'm running for office.
But you put it in such a good way.
Yeah.
Because that is so true. that we don't trust them because
absolutely
there should not be that many teachers not at work and protesting. Like, they shouldn't have to be doing that.
We have teachers leaving the state. Like, I left teaching, right? After one year because I couldn't work two jobs and do that, you know? Now I, you know, basically do, but that's what happens, you know? We have teachers leaving the state. We have public employees who didn't receive a raise for years and years and years.
Years.
And then they finally did.
Like, the last 5 years of my marriage. Like,
Heard about it every day. But when they finally did, then guess what happened? You know, it jacked up insurance rates.
Yeah.
Spring of 2017, got really involved. I started knocking doors for candidates who I thought were pro public services, pro public education, you know, who I thought were, few of them did win. And then whenever it came time for city council filing in December of 2017, at this time I had only been involved for about a year. And,
Who people approach you to run, or did you decide on your own?
I totally decided.
That's fantastic.
Yes. So I actually asked many people to run for that seat. I asked my neighbors. I was like, hey, you know, the seat is up. You seem great. You really know what's going on. I think that you would be perfect in this position. I'll knock doors for you. I'll do whatever we need to do to help get you elected. And people were just, no, thank you. Never in a million years, you know, would I do that, run for office.
Right.
I said, okay, if nobody else files against the incumbent,
I'm doing it.
And so I waited till the last day, last 2 hours, and I got
so dramatic.
I know. I was like, I was keeping in touch with my friend at the time who was watching. She was watching for me. So I was like, okay, I'm doing it. I'm going to go. I'm doing it. And so I did it. By like 5 p.m. that day, I had people messaging me, and I got phone calls. One of my best friends who actually like helped run my campaign was in Chicago or New York at the time, and she was sending me gifts and memes and stuff about how excited she was from Elf, the Will Ferrell movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So nice.
I was like, great. Yeah, people know now.
We all need a friend like that, don't we?
I have so many friends amazing. Like that. I have basically like a squad of amazing women who just, we uplift each other, and we honestly need that, especially in this realm. And
with social media and everything, I feel like that's great to see women come together and be strong together.
Oh, totally.
Instead of tearing each other down or anything.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, super important.
Many older women and some women, even younger women.
Yeah.
We still, you know, we're brought up basically to compete with each other for the attention of men and for jobs and for the same spaces, you know what I mean? And so there's still that sort of underlying tension.
Yeah, envy or jealousy kind of, because you said it's all insecurity, because it's like you said, put them against each other. So
absolutely.
It's like, I got to look better than you. I got to do this. And it's
because if
you
pit people against each other,
yeah,
then they can't unite against the common, which is what they do literally with the bipartisan system, like Democrats versus Republicans. Yeah. You know what
that
I mean?
That is a true story.
Yeah. Totally true. Like, this
that is
like
a correct statement.
It's common.
Absolutely.
Divide and conquer. You know what I mean? We know this is a historical, like, in any situation, if you divide, you can conquer.
Absolutely.
So, anyway, long story short, I won my election.
So you won it, folks. And what was the... You won it when?
I won it on my birthday.
On her birthday.
April 3rd.
That's so now your birthday means two different things.
It does. And I was like, there's no way we could top this birthday. This year actually started off really, really bad. And then by the end of the day, so like I don't know if y'all know, but we had organized this whole rally, Strike Back with Love, because after there was a racist incident in Norman on my birthday.
Right.
The stormwater vote failed. So I woke up, I was like, what are we going to do about the city's budget? And then I was like, oh my God, now these racists are graffitiing all over our public spaces, on schools and art. How dare they, you know, do this? And so me and the mayor, so one of my constituents actually reached out to me, and she's like, hey, can you know, start putting together a rally, maybe with the other council members? So actually many of the women on council, it was me and the mayor, a couple other counselors. We started contacting people we knew, Facebook invites, organizing. You know, that's a big part of my political story, is that I'm an organizer, you know, bringing people together, having conversations, inviting them, you know, going door to door, bringing in, doing that, having meetings, holding debates, things like that. So we did that, and it was a beautiful day. There was hundreds of people who showed up at that rally, and it was very emotional, you know, but it was it was a show of our community. So while we do have it was full circle. Absolutely.
That's a full circle
except
year.
Except for the city budget. But yeah. Anyway, so yeah. So, and you know, what I will mention is I told you guys earlier that when I was running in my city council race, I had, I was in my second semester of grad school, and I was not working at the time, actually. So I was quit a job. Then I was under so much stress. I was looking at, you know, social media and what people were saying about, you know, me running and all this stuff. And I was focused on
the
school.
Comments.
Yeah.
Oh, the comments.
PSA, don't read the comments.
Don't read the, comments unless you have a glutton for punishment. Totally. Never read the comments.
I was a sweet 23, and I had
a sweet 23.
A sweet 23, and I really thought I was going to get elected to council. I was seeing through rose-colored glasses. I was thinking, "Kumbaya, let's change the world together." I got slapped in the face by reality. Anyway, so I was throwing up. Yeah.
Those,
I never
those
thought.
Those are good slaps. They're always good slaps.
It was a bad. It was a hard slap.
Been a good slap.
I hit the floor and got back up. Got back up.
But you got back up.
Yeah, but that's what makes them good. You know, you get slapped really hard, and then you get right back up.
So yeah, but I never thought I had nausea. Or anything like that, but I had lost my appetite.
Man.
I had completely lost my appetite, didn't want to eat. I was so stressed. And then I would just throw up. I would just get stressed and throw up. And so
anxiety.
When I'm medicating, you know what I mean? I don't have that problem.
It calms all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing. So
we talk about my IBS. Anxiety can trigger my IBS. A sativa. Trigger my IBS.
So, and that's why we were talking earlier. That's why sativa is not my favorite because I get a little anxious. It gets in my head, you know? That's why the indica is just so much nicer.
So, and you said it gets you in your head, but it actually, I mean, it gets me in my gut. It's weird.
Yes.
Like somebody asked me what does it feel like? And I said, it basically just feels like my insides are having an anxiety attack. Like that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
So I totally understand where you're coming from.
Thank you.
But let me just say, it's nice to see that you're well-educated and paying attention to your environment and such. Because if you weren't, maybe, like you said, you're vegetarian and things.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes you have interest in all things natural. And you know what I'm saying? So cannabis is part of that. So it's nice to see that, to take those different avenues and kind of spread it all across, you know, the way you eat, what you, like I said, makeup. And also as cannabis, it's very nice to see
As
that.
A vegetarian, I would think that you also have that connection, you know, to the earth.
I do.
Know that's what you were getting
more than as a vegetarian, you know, we can all, everybody has access to that sort of, like, you know, natural feminine earth energy, you know, Mother Earth that has given us all cannabis, obviously, you know, and I really do believe I actually was so much more in touch with my masculine side for so long. And, you know, I kind of put the feminine side aside because I was like, you know, I was brought up in that same culture thinking that, you know, masculinity equaled manliness.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And that femininity equaled emotional and all of these things. And that's so not the truth. You know, manliness, when we talk about toxic masculinity and things like that, and, you know, toxic masculinity, because we're equating it with be a man and don't cry and don't express your emotions and things like that.
Yes.
And that's not divine, you know, earthly energy.
Right.
And that's why I rejected the feminine side for so long, because I didn't want to be, you know, emotional. But
you wanted to appear strong.
I wanted to appear strong. Absolutely. And there's strength.
I did air quotes when
exactly.
Sorry.
So yeah, and then I finally started really welcoming that, and that was part of that my journey, you know, the vegetarianism and getting in touch with the earth, going out in nature, you know, rejecting pharmaceuticals.
That's
and
so
things
amazing.
Like that.
Yeah, that is
when
great.
Necessary.
That's great.
I'm super jealous of your journey.
I'm not gonna lie, I am too.
Don't be jealous of your boogie. I am super jealous. That's amazing.
We are all on
because
this journey together.
I would say that, you know, me being so young, you like. It's so easy to go eat horrible things, and just because
totally.
You're young, you're like, oh, I'm just going to go do whatever I want.
Well,
you know?
you're busy.
You know?
It takes time and effort to eat correctly.
Exactly.
So I will share some things with you. I watch a lot of TED Talks. It does take time and effort. And this is the thing, is I do not like to cook. I don't have time a lot of the time. So I either eat well or I don't eat. And that's also
fasting.
Intermittent fasting is actually good.
I'm all about some intermittent fasting.
It's so good. It fights diabetes. And so if we're going to talk about food a little bit.
But see, that's the great thing about our show is you never know where it's going to go.
Exactly. You don't.
Lindsay's going to be listening to it. Shout out to Lindsay.
Shout out Lindsay.
That's my campaign
Lindsay,
manager.
I promise. Look, I told you we'd be good, Lindsay.
Shout out to Lindsay. We're on our best behavior.
So yeah, like it takes time. It's really hard. So I either, you know, don't eat or I eat well.
Yeah.
And I eat a salad almost every single day, and I do not mind repetition. I get a lot of iron out of spinach. I'm meticulous. I have a routine, and if I'm off my routine, I'm off my game. I eat a banana every single morning. I have coffee.
Wow.
No sugar. Yes.
Yeah. This is nuts because it doesn't sound real. When I hear people say this stuff, I'm like, what?
Alex.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just like, but you got to have that type of routine, especially
you're
saying you're young and you're involved in
politics. Anderson Cooper has eaten the same thing for like the past 20 years in a row for breakfast.
Really? And oatmeal. Look at him. Look at his oatmeal. Skin.
Oh, yeah.
He's
amazing.
Look at him.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. He looks great.
But yeah, you're discussing also that now you're in charge of people's lives. I mean, that's a lot of stress.
It's so much.
Especially at this age.
Yeah.
So in saying that, you got to have that routine to help you out, to keep you going.
Things I don't mentally have to worry about.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Things I can control. And I can control my lifestyle. I don't like calling vegetarianism a diet or veganism a diet because it is, you know, it's a lifestyle. You know, it's part of that holistic healthy, you know, choice.
It's mental, physical, spiritually, just being vegetarian. You gotta
absolutely.
Yeah, it changes
and
the energy.
I'm in touch with the animals.
Yeah,
you know, I feel very connected with my dogs. I will be out. An owl winked at me on my 20th birthday.
I love it.
Oh my god,
I love it.
Some people are gonna be like, "Oh, that's spooky," but I felt like totally.
It's just a connection.
Yeah, it's good to be
it's
in
a
touch.
Connection. Absolutely,
it's a grounded connection.
And also in Oklahoma, we're so special because we know we can walk outside and we know the weather. How you know you can smell the rain.
Yeah,
a day away and
it's
our
crazy
joints.
It's super crazy.
I will also say vegetarianism is also not, it's not healthy alone, you know. If you're still drinking soda, if you're still eating, you know, bean burritos at Taco Bell at 2 a.m you know, like you're still not quite, it's not the healthiest life. Or if you're eating pasta constantly,
yeah,
you know, some people go vegetarian think I'm gonna lose weight. No. When I first went vegetarian, I ate all the pasta. Grilled cheese was my life. And so you've still got to be cognizant about what's in your food, even, you know.
Well, it's because it's your fuel.
It is, totally.
Straight up, it's your fuel. And then when you could complement that with cannabis, I mean, it's a win-win.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Win-win. Yes. Absolutely.
100 P is what the kids say.
Is that what the kids, like, is that what the kids are saying?
Yeah,
100 P's?
100 P. It's 100%, right?
Oh,
100 P.
I feel so old right now. 100 P.
I feel
now
old, and I'm 21.
You're 21.
This
you're younger than me.
Yeah, I feel old in this conversation.
100 P.
I was gonna say though, I think it's interesting how you were able to manage and adapt your life to, because you're a politician now, so you got to mold the vegetarianism, you got to mold all that into being a politician.
It really sounds like it sets you all up.
Yeah, that too.
It
you
truly,
know what I'm saying? That's
truly.
What I was going to say too.
You know, but, it's funny that you say that, because in third grade, I quit eating shrimp and I stopped eating Jell-O because I learned where it came from.
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it was a long time, like third grade. I was like.
So you don't eat gummies?
No, unless they are.
Or vegan?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I do.
Okay.
And I,
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. We actually had some technical difficulties here. I'm not going to explain what it is because you won't know what it is, you know?
Because it was technical.
It was
He's
technical.
He's got a setup
Too
here.
Too technical. I got stuff to do. Take stuff to take care of.
It's buttons
anyways,
and knobs.
Anyways,
and
where we were. So being holistic, cannabis, and get involved with cannabis, being vegetarian, stuff
absolutely.
Like that.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that impacting your life.
A whole
and,
lifestyle.
In such a positive way.
Absolutely.
And I feel like this obviously has a big influence on what you're doing now. And I think you being involved with the cannabis also shows that you're willing to be tied to the community. Because, like, me and him discussed multiple times, on the cannabis, you have to be involved. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You want to be involved because it's a lot of people just like you, and we all have something to relate to. And I think it's what we talked about earlier. You know, when politicians get involved with cannabis, it's like immediately they're accepted into a big hug, like, thank you,
totally.
You know? It's a thank you, and you can feel what we're feeling type of thing. Mm-hmm. You're on the level as us.
And going off that, how did you get involved and meet John Fraser?
Actually, great question. So I learned during my council race, actually, so in the same spring of 2018, it was him and some other 788 folks who were, I know one of my constituents.
At the time, we were the 788 folks.
I'm a 788 folk.
I'm a 788er.
Yeah.
I call us canna activists, you know, canna activist people. I like us. So I like our crowd. Anyway, so they were hosting a educational sort of learn more about the 788 at the Norman Public Library. I said, I'm there.
That's great. Yeah.
Yep. And so showed up, and that was when I first, and I was literally talking to John yesterday, and he said, you came to my very first, what did he say? It wasn't TED Talk, but he goes, you came to my very first talk at the library. I was like, yes, I was there. And we talked, and his story is it's the classic story of Oklahoma, you know, veteran with, you know, having to leave opioids behind. That's my grandpa's story. So I've adopted John, you know, this John, if you're listening,
I hope he listens.
So he's like, I'm his like adopted granddaughter. He's my adopted grandpa.
It's awesome.
Because he's like my local grandpa. I can go to him and he will, you know, his dog's name is Gunny. I will say he'll sick Gunny on anybody for me.
That's fantastic. Yeah,
like, yeah, he's amazing.
Helping you out.
Absolutely.
You know,
and I'm helping him out, you know. Yeah. Any way I can. So we knocked doors. I remember, so we both were at a meeting in Oklahoma City. We have this great photo. I will show you another one. The one I showed you was my election day where he and I are together and we're peace signing like this. Yes, and he's wearing his cannabis shirt.
I do believe I think I shared that one.
You did on Twitter. Okay. I saw.
On the Twitters.
I'm learning how to tweet.
Listen, Twitter's where it's at.
I'm figuring it out. It's another one of those. But yeah.
So and here's the thing. So I know you love Facebook.
I hate it.
Me too. With a passion.
But I'm on it.
But it's a great way for people to be able to interact. But mm-hmm. the great thing about Twitter is that you can still have those disagreements with people.
Absolutely.
But there's only so many characters they can disagree with.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they have to really be
dedicated. Yeah. I mean, seriously. And yeah. sometimes it's just not even worth it. At the Our Revolution, Oklahoma.
Yep. Let me see real fast.
Yeah. Oh, we got this.
Yeah. So we
that is amazing.
We were organizing for going to knock doors for 788. And so we were all figuring out what packets we were going to take. And so.
And you were on the council this time, correct?
This was my run. I may have only been knocking doors for myself because that's what you do if you have time. So, right. But yeah, I met him first during my run. And then after, oh, obviously, fantastic. Because I was elected in April. So we were still doing activism through June, at the end of June.
Right.
You know, so I think that was actually around May or June, whenever we were at that meeting. So we were knocking doors. We met at the Starbucks. He'll recall. I had my niece and nephew with me. I took them door knocking in the December of 20.
Smart.
I'm getting them started young, like, man.
That's smart.
I give them something to do. So I'll give her, I gave her when we went knocking for 788, I gave her the clipboard and I was like, okay, tell us where we're going next. And so I would talk to the voter.
That's fantastic. Mm.
Another thing
it.
Is like, people are less likely to slam the door on your face. Yeah.
Right. Look, we're not selling anything.
No, yeah. We're selling you democracy.
Right.
Freedom.
And health.
And health. Yeah. Absolutely.
For sure.
And I want to say that's great, too, because like you just said, you knowing what was in Jell-O, you didn't want to eat it. So in saying that, you have a niece, and you're trying to show her also at a young age. So that could potentially, when she gets older.
Her mom actually got mad at me for that.
Oh, really?
Well, not that, but like when she found out I was vegetarian and why. Okay. I was like, they do things to animals that I disagree with. And so Audrina was like, I'm vegetarian now. She was like 5 years old.
So you started the drama. Well, no wonder. Way to go, Aunt. Way to go, Aunt Alex.
I know. I'm amazing.
Going back to John, too. Like, and the reason I asked if you were on the council then is because having someone that is running or in the spotlight like that to support 788 at that moment was monumental as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at the
because the only other person at that moment who even remotely, to my knowledge, was even supportive at all. Your fellow council member, Steven, just because of what he had went
through.
Definitely.
That was game changing. And so I also went to, I used to go to the Friendly Market all the time. Mm-hmm. Whenever I actually used to live in a different area of town, but we used to go to the Friendly Market all the time. And actually during the Friendly Market case, whenever the police were recording the Friendly Market and people going in and out.
You were on surveillance.
I was on surveillance.
Fantastic.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Way to go, girl.
Crazy. Because they showed us at the Friendly. Thank you. I know. Yeah. Had my first.
That would
TV,
be my luck too. My really? First, God dang it.
My first debut.
I'll be signing autographs later.
Yes. Yeah, so they showed the lawyers actually showed that whole thing at the Friendly Market. They're like, if you're on surveillance, then we owe you a t-shirt. Still waiting on my t-shirt.
Oh.
Calling y'all out. I love all of them. And actually, yeah, I love Steven and Robert, all of the people who work there. Customer service, amazing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
As you know.
I've always heard good things about that.
10 out of 10, highly recommend.
Imperative.
But yeah, so I know John and I, I think just this past, was it spring? I think it was. Yeah. Just this past spring, he came to a cleanup. So part of this whole healthy thing is cleaning up our environment as well.
Oh,
you
for
know?
Sure.
And I think
for
so.
Sure.
And by the way, the environment is number one. It should be the number one talking point in 2020, hands down.
Literally definitely. Should just be the number definitely. One talking point 24/7 all day long.
So, and that's the thing. We've
I have climate change anxiety. I don't know. I'm sure you see me post about it all the time because the weather nowadays, it's never just the weather.
No.
It's always an event.
It is an event. Yes, yes, absolutely.
Like, it can never just rain.
Especially in places like where we don't have the infrastructure to support the type of rain bombs that we're getting. I also went to, I went to the Climate Reality Summit in the beginning of August, where it's Al Gore's sort of organization, right, and learned, you know, what I, some of the, what I already knew and what I was looking for was policy. We need to be able to implement policy. We have to be able to empower cities to develop their own municipal utility, especially in Oklahoma. We are in a place, okay, where
a unique place.
A unique place.
Very unique.
Where we have entities that have monopolies, basically, on the way, like, over whole areas, right? Mm-hmm. And they're the provider, you know, of, you know, electricity. Wow. Okay.
Well, and that's the thing. I've lived in Dallas. You know, when you lived in Oklahoma, it's funny that you say that, because when you lived in Oklahoma all your life and you moved to Dallas or whatever, and they're like, oh, okay, so who do you want to choose to be your energy provider? And you're like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'm blessed.
You're like, what? What are you talking about?
I didn't know that was a thing.
They do.
Exactly. My point. Exactly.
And it's really interesting. And we're whole. So Norman is special again because we have, we're in the middle of a franchise agreement. And I, but what we need to keep in mind is that we have a heavy agricultural market in Oklahoma. Hemp is part of that now. Hemp is
huge.
This is a huge part of it.
Huge.
So when we're talking about the environment and we're talking about hemp and cleaning up the environment, which is how we got here with, you know, me and John at the Sutton Wilderness.
Right.
He was my partner.
We always get to where we're going.
We always
get. Just takes a long time to get there sometimes.
And I'm so with it. And so I'm here. I am here for it. We have to think about our market. It's all tied together. We clean up our environment. We prioritize the environment, protecting our air and land and water. Water is life. We all need water to survive.
For sure.
So, and we have such a market here. So when we're talking to, you know, people who may not have the same sense of climate change, or they may have a negative perspective on, you know, environmentalists, they think we're all hippies and stoners and stuff.
Exactly what they think.
See, yeah, and I try to break that. That's why I always refer to it as cannabis.
Like, me too.
I don't say that stoner, or if I say get high, it's totally by accident. Yeah. Like, I always say it's always Medicaid.
Totally. Mm-hmm. That's why you thought I was talking about tobacco when I said smoking earlier. Mm.
That's that reminds me of the meme. A meme, you know, where people go, oh, do you smoke?
Smoke what?
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smoke what?
What?
Yeah.
I also feel way more grand being able to consume cannabis wherever you want. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many times I've sat at the stoplight and been accosted by someone smoking a cigarette in their car next to me. I'd rather be accosted by someone consuming a pre-fill.
And people bond over that, too.
For sure. So, like, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People bond. If you see somebody, you smoke.
Brings everybody together.
Yeah.
Because
truly,
it's the one thing that makes everybody feel good.
Yes.
That is the one reason, the main reason everybody consumes. They can say it's to feel good or feel better.
Feel better. Exactly. Absolutely.
I can't think of any other reason to. It's to feel good.
Decompress. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To feel better. Yeah. Like, you've had a crappy day, you come home, feel better.
Should be just as like drinking a glass of wine when you get home. I think it should just be the exact same. There's no different.
Yes.
You know, just relaxing.
Well,
off
and
the
here
day.
We are in Oklahoma. It is.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
5% of the population has their card.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talk about intent, you know, intoxicating, and it is, you know, it still has certain effects. We think about wine, so it's funny that you bring that up because you know, from a policy perspective, also what we are looking at as cities is, you know, in our city alone, because this whole cannabis market, when it was passed, when medical was passed, we were thinking about, what does this mean? Where are we going to put, you know, them? Us,
right?
You know,
exactly.
Yeah. What are we gonna do? Yeah. As far as,
because in the beginning, they were like, well, we're gonna, but that changed.
It did
quickly
because the more cardholders, and you have to notice this is a big community, so you
huge.
Have to adapt your policies and the way you talk about things, speak about things involving cannabis. You gotta.
And what I've found and what we've witnessed is that people were over-regulating, actually, businesses in cannabis. So there has to be a balance. And so when it comes to cannabis, we're thinking like, well, you know, what's the kind of deal with the pharmacy owners? Like my opponent, does he pay the same registration fee and licensing fee and all of this stuff to operate a pharmacy as these dispensary owners
do? Okay,
what I'm saying? So we have to look at these things and we have to be equitable. So we always talk about equity, you know.
And being fair.
And being fair. And everybody has a different sense of fairness too. And so there's still a stigma, but that's what we're looking at zoning. And so some people, you know, we have certain constituents who don't want to be anywhere near a dispensary. They don't want to have, you know.
And what's funny about that too, because studies show that a dispensary in the neighborhood lowers crime.
You know what else? When I posted this earlier on my Instagram post, because I have this whole policy analysis sitting in front of me that I wrote last fall. But it in places where dispensaries are accessible, opioid-related deaths decline by 40%. This is at least this is proven.
It's facts.
It's documented. Yeah. I have it. Facts.
She has it on paper.
You can
we
fact
see it,
check
people.
Me. Yeah. It's
she brought
a study.
Receipts.
And, I do. And I keep the receipts.
We have all receipts, folks. Never forget it.
Never bring up even the Norman Music Festival. I remember them saying, hey, you guys can medicate.
You can so weird, that's funny too, like, that's because cool, that was one of my big things on the Twitter side. Like, I always bring that up. Like, I'm that person that's like, oh, are you going to be able to cater to?
Yeah. You're the
I like to
point.
Feel responsible for that sometimes for people who have to acknowledge that.
Because you have the voice, you know
and
what I'm saying?
It's still taboo though. It's more taboo. So at Norman Music Fest, you can drink wine and beer outside.
Of course, you can be. I've seen people plastered in front of a cop or whatever, and I don't feel comfortable. Even though medically I have my medical card, I don't feel comfortable lighting a joint all the way.
I do
just right in front of a. But
I do.
Does, but
I will do it.
You know.
Well, and as a politician, you know, in my I'm a public face and everything. Yeah. I'm super sketch about it. I have my med card, and I feel like people will perceive me a certain way. You know, I'm already young, and people come at me for my age, and you know, think I'm immature already. So if
and
I
being
you know,
a woman on top of
being
that, there's
a
lot
that,
going on. Yeah.
But and also here's the thing about that. I just tweeted about this yesterday. If you are planning on being an elected official or running for any office, if you don't have any stance, you have to have a stance on cannabis. And it's going to have to be positive.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's going to have to be positive. Like, let's talk about Joe Biden super, super quick.
Super quick. Well, super, you were so spot on with what you said.
Super quick. So this week, Joe Biden said that he would not legalize marijuana if he became president. And I just think that that's his easy way out. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's his easy way out because everybody knows it's a topic. Mm-hmm. They have voted it out of the House Judiciary Committee just this week. So, I mean, like, it's happening. It's happening.
I want to show you guys a political cartoon. I'm going to give them a shout out on Instagram. So
shout it. Who is it?
Shout out. This is Political Cartoons America.
Political
so political
cartoons
underscore
America.
Cartoons underscore America.
We'll
they
link it.
Did a,
of course.
They did
of
a political cartoon yesterday. And it was whether marijuana is a gateway drug depends on the color of your skin. And it's a gateway to a penitentiary.
You are at it's spot on.
Wow.
I mean, see, this political cartoons are so spot on and just to the point.
Absolutely. So it's they're also going to do a political cartoon for me as well.
That is
so
amazing.
Big shout out to them. I want to keep seeing the great work that they're doing. Yeah. So fabulous.
And what you said earlier was so important about you can't even, you don't feel comfortable going to dispensaries. And I guarantee if someone runs into a politician at a liquor store, they're not going to think twice about it. It's not going to be anything. It's that's cool. It's fun.
Or at a bar. Oh, at a bar. Yeah, I'll buy.
Exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely. The mayor and I go and have champagne sometimes and people see us there and that's a forum. You know, they talk to us there.
Yeah.
And they, you know, if they recognize us or they say, you know, thanks for your service or what do you think about this? Can you tell me? I was voting actually at the election board and this lady was like, oh, this is our counselor. Our lady walked in and said, I have something to talk to you about. I said, bring it on.
Right
you
now.
Know,
let's
I'm
do
here.
It.
I got this knowledge. I'm ready to drop
let's
it
do
on
it.
You.
That's what I'm here
and
for.
And it was great. Yeah. It was just a basic, you know, what about these playgrounds? I said, probably part of our, anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So to back to your point. Yeah. And I actually, there's a question that you guys had sent me about what's my go-to dispensary. I live a half a mile from one of my favorite dispensaries. There's another one that does organic, but and it's up the way and they do a great deal as well. But the one that I typically go to is the Honey Pot.
Oh, the Honey Pot with
the Honey Pot
in
Norman.
Drive-through, yeah.
Drive-through,
yes.
Honey Pot.
Yes,
drive-through.
That's, I'm like, drive-through's amazing.
I'll leave a link to that.
Drive-through is
that's
super
great.
Important.
After your post, they started following me on Instagram. Thank you.
Oh,
wow.
Shout out to
Honey Pot.
Honey Pot.
That's in my, it's outside of my ward. Just barely, it's on the edge. But it is in my Senate district. And you know what? They were so kind. They put I asked them if I could leave my literature about my campaign there and they said yeah put it right here.
That's amazing.
That's what I want to go around. You know, I want to be involved in the cannabis community and I want them to want to be involved with what we're doing, you know, what you with politics because it affects all
of
us.
Being one of the first politicians to in Oklahoma to fully accept it and be supportive and admit or so call say come out of the closet with your card, that's amazing. Like it's groundbreaking.
Thank you.
I mean, because you've even said earlier
literally
young,
like we're
you
breaking
know,
grounds across the nation.
Exactly. Yeah
And you know, I was excited to come out about cannabis because you keep it hidden for so long because
and it eats at you even though it's so weird to how it does.
You know, why am I ashamed of, you know, medicating? You know what I mean, where people we know that people have you know, prescriptions, and they, like we say, we drink, and that's so normal.
Oh, it's okay for someone to go pop a Xanax or
whatever.
Drink
the, yeah, go out to the bar or something after a long day. Why is it so taboo for me to say, yeah, I just, you know, sparked up a joint after a really long day. I work really hard, and I wanted to let my mind kind of relax. You
deserve that.
And your body, because your body's tired.
And I think that, you know, we talked about this a little before we started recording a little bit, but, you know, we look different. You know, people, when they think about cannabis, it used to have, it had such a negative connotation for so long.
It was Cheech and Chong.
And it was either Cheech and Chong or they associated it with, like, laziness.
We can do, like, a Snoop Dogg, like, that type of thing. It's just, like, a cool little, not the, you know, the medical use of it, the benefits of it. When you go deep into it, it's deeper than just, like you said, or just getting high or stuff like that. It's way more deeper than that.
And so, and I wrote, like, all of this. And so I'll talk a little bit about,
of course.
The negative connotation. I say it right here in the very beginning. I don't know if you went through and read this that I sent you.
I read over it. It's funny because I've talked about how the term marijuana is
racist itself.
For sure.
So that's why I say cannabis. That,
right? I believe we have. But cannabis is... And that's what's important, though, that at this time we need to work on just the saying of the words.
And we can respect the history of
it.
I can absolutely respect stoner history. Yeah. I 100% respect stoner history. I grew up watching a Cheech and Chong movie and laughing. Like, I respect that.
Uh-huh. And we need to have a healthy respect because we need to be able to address these things and make that change. We need a transition. You know, it's a plant. It's not a drug. Like, people, you know, it doesn't cause violent behavior. And that's what happened was in the 19... It wasn't really seen negatively until about 1910 when the Mexican Revolution happened and there were immigrants coming into the United States and there was that xenophobia. Mm-hmm. And then especially in 1929 when the stock market crashed due to the release of banking or due to the lack of banking regulations and unchecked lending, people started blaming, you know, Mexicans and brown people for taking their jobs when really it was on these, you know, entities you know, they are the ones who, because of the lack of regulation, you know, that's what caused it. And but they, you know, look to put blame elsewhere so that they can keep up the shenanigans. And so they blamed it
on... Isn't that really just what everybody does, is put the blame off somebody else to keep their shenanigans going?
Absolutely,
Definitely.
And that's why I'm such a funky politician. I own it. If I do something wrong, I own
it. Just tell me I can own it and we can move on.
Absolutely. If I make a mistake, let me own it.
That's good.
Okay?
That's good. Yeah.
And you know, we don't need to go in circles about it, but that's what happened, you know. And so it started having this xenophobia, you know, racism, classism even, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they
absolutely,
when they, so after the crash, you know, states started criminalizing cannabis one by one. And then they were demanding the federal government do something. The guy who was appointed to the national or the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, Harry Anslinger, at first he said, no, you know, there's no studies, there's nothing proving that cannabis is actually causing violence and these things that you're saying. So then they started kind of saying that these people were high whenever they did this crime.
Oh,
cannabis doesn't make you violent. If you're violent, you're just a violent person.
Yeah.
And so then...
If anything, cannabis helps you not be violent.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
If anything.
So in the 1937, they instituted the... Marijuana Tax Act.
37, right?
1937, yes. So at that time, you could only... Possession of cannabis was completely criminalized unless you possessed a federal tax stamp, which was virtually completely difficult. Unobtainable.
No.
Absolutely. So this, you know, this began the Reefer Madness era. And so after...
Have you ever seen Reefer Madness?
I thought it was a satire. So it was on in the background at my dad's house when I was in high school. I was like, this is hilarious.
I can honestly say that I've never fully seen it, but just... I've seen enough clips to know that it's truly ridiculous.
I thought it was a satire. So it wasn't, apparently. It was propaganda. And there's all this
strictly propaganda.
So then, you know, you get the 1970s, because clearly, you know, criminalization wasn't enough. So then we get Nixon. You know, his whole war on drugs, obviously, as we know, was rooted largely in, you know, racism.
And put a lot
and
of people
classism.
In prison.
Put a ton of people. Yeah. I have the exact numbers here. So Nixon, you know, they started doing the mass incarceration, but it got tremendously worse under the Reagan administration.
Yeah.
When they buckled down even harder, and incarceration rates skyrocketed from 50,000 to 400,000 from 1980 to 1997. We know, you know, this is rooted in racism. And and especially with incarceration. And if you've ever read the 13th Amendment or if you've ever seen 13th, the documentary, you know that when you're incarcerated, you're basically stripped of your rights.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they exploit prison labor, and it is modern day slavery. It is absolutely modern day slavery. You can, you know, they don't pay these people for their labor. And then not only that, but like here in Oklahoma, for example, you know, those license plates that we have to go and buy and renew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Prison labor makes those, and then they charge us for them. Mm. Like we have. Yeah, I know.
I'm glad you brought up the documentary, because what was something about that when they talked about all the companies that invest in these private prisons?
Oh, yeah.
It blew my mind.
Absolutely.
I was like, you never would have thought that these companies would be doing something like this. But
what's their interest?
Exactly.
What interest do they have?
Yeah, yeah. Like, why?
I
would
mean, all you have to do really is watch Orange Is the New Black. That's amazing. You haven't?
No, I don't watch a lot of TV, actually.
But so you're saying it depicts it to show that those type of things, what goes on?
Oh, the corporation control. Yeah, yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Sure does.
And in 13, it did that a lot. And after, I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm in disbelief that these companies that we put a lot of money into, they're putting a lot of money into these private prisons. And prisoners being in there is how they make their money.
Mm-hmm. Which is disgusting.
It's disgusting. A continued cycle, and it's like everyone's watching it happen.
Or keep them busy, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You have some of the brightest people, brightest talent, you know. Yes, public education is so critical, right? Like making sure we have quality public education, because that's where it starts, is education.
For sure.
But that's why they defund it.
And I don't know what year it was, but women were like the highest incarceration in the state, in the country, right? Or is that now?
Oklahoma
definitely has the highest incarceration rate. The Oklahoma Policy Institute also published something, I think back in August, about Oklahoma. People were in disbelief when I told them that Oklahoma has the highest incarceration rate in the world.
Yeah.
And especially for women. Yes. And we incarcerate more women than anywhere else. And not, you know, it's really messed up because many women are incarcerated for killing their domestic abuser.
That is the correct
statement.
And I know that too because that's my ex-husband's work. I know it's crazy, it's super crazy.
And
we
you
don't
know.
Have and then that's what I want to get to the fact that the education part, we're like the least in having good education.
Yes.
And then our prisons are filled with people, so like you said, it makes sense that it seems like it's a known thing.
It's a vicious cycle.
And it's just a cycle. And it's like, we're supposed to just sit here.
We literally talk about that. It's the pipeline to prison, the school to pipeline to prison.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens, you know, and honestly, school, we have to recognize our institutions as, you know, there's so many problems, and it's so important to talk about, you know, and we have to have the tough conversations. Otherwise, nothing's going to change.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And this just like continues to polarize us. And as we, like we said, divide and conquer, as we continue to be polarized, we are not coming together for the right reasons, you know, to advocate for each other, which is hands down like what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
We really have to get that back. You know, just because you don't look like me, talk like me.
The easiest way to do that is to pass a joint.
I was gonna say that, you know, me and him talk about that. This cannabis community brings, like you said earlier, all different worlds together.
Absolutely.
Like no matter what, it would just bring it all together.
I mean, we have 5% of the population of Oklahoma
already
their card right now.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
And a lot of money for the state.
Oh,
so much money.
A lot. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to get better.
You know, the economic benefits of legalizing, decriminalizing cannabis. In Norman, we completely decriminalized it.
Right. We talked about that earlier today.
We did talk about the laws changing and having to adapt.
And we've
got
to decriminalize it everywhere. It's a plant. Last time I checked. You know what I mean?
At the end of the day.
Can you imagine going, if I had a salad in my car? Can you imagine? Like, I'm going to consume that later too. Are you going to, what's going to happen?
Oh my gosh. And I do want to include, if anyone gets anything out of this episode, the main fact is anybody should be able to sit down and talk with their local officials like this. You know what I'm saying? It shouldn't be hard far to reach, and I can't, you know.
Absolutely.
So it should be important that all politicians make sure to sit down and talk to people in your community. Come on the podcast, have some fun.
Answer emails.
Yes.
Answer phone calls.
Letters.
Do not hide from your constituents.
Knock on doors.
Yeah. Knock doors, you know. Yeah, it's call to action, everybody. Mm-hmm. I understand there's so much apathy, voter apathy, and things like that. Just go vote.
Just vote.
June
30th
for Alex Scott.
Yes, I will. Will you shout out your socials? I could put them in the description if you don't remember them. But
it is Alex Scott. _2020 Instagram.
On Instagram. Okay. On Twitter, I am Real Alex Scott.
Okay, perfect.
I am Real Alex Scott.
Well, thank you again.
I'm also on Facebook.
We appreciate it.
Right,
so much.
Facebook. Yes. It's just Alex Scott.
So if you look for me on Facebook, it's Alex Scott for Senate District 15, I think.
Okay,
and that's my
perfect.
But if you look up Alexandra Scott, you may find my personal page.
Yeah.
But Alex Scott.
We'll definitely link it below. Thank you again,
though.
You
guys are so fabulous.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Well, bye-bye, everyone.
See you guys later.
Stay medicated. Bye-bye.
Bye. For sure.